answer right here. I've been waiting for this for 3 long years. The patients have waited for decades. Etoposalatosis, etoposalatosis. Since it works on Parkinson's, why not on encephalitis lethargica? So much like Parkinson's.
Encephalitis lethargica.
Have you seen this Dr. Podsnap? Have you seen the New England Journal of Medicine?
How nice to see you here, Dr. Sachs.
Dr. Cotts is making it out.
Who does this Englishman think he is? What is this Oxford boy doing here in the Bronx? Where does he think he is practicing? We're not Mass General!
I believe that we now have a treatment to try that can bring the hopeless to life again. Cotts is faking it out. Cotts doses of Etopa brings no hope to those with Parkinson's. We must try it. We must try it on our encephalitis lethargica patients.
Modification of Parkinsonism, chronic treatment with L-Dopa by George C. Cotts.
Is faking it out.
But they are different, Dr. Sachs. They don't have Parkinson's, Dr. Sachs.
Other symptoms are similar, Parkinson.
People not guinea pigs, Dr. Sachs. We don't experiment here at Beth Abraham. Another fancy paper, it will be disproven before you know it. Like Belladonna.
No, it's not like Belladonna.
I a siamine.
Oh, but like a siamine.
Like a mantonine.
No, but like those other drugs. This is real science, please listen. What have you to offer them? You must listen to me.
I must listen to you. Young man, watch yourself, watch what you say.
Watch yourself, watch what you say.
We don't experiment here at Beth Abraham.
We don't experiment here at Beth Abraham. We are entrusted with Beth
Abraham. Please just read more and consider.
Slowly increasing doses of L3, 4-dihydroxyphenylalanine, L-DOPA, induced at least a partial improvement in a series of 26 patients with Parkinsonism. Improvement of performance was graded as modest in 4, marked in 8, and dramatic in 10.
Dramatic in 10!
One patient, choose one. I hope for your sake you are right.
Thank you, Dr. Podsnap.
That's a scene from Tobias Picker's operatic setting of the book by Oliver Sacks, Awakenings, that became a famous film. This is Act 1, Scene 2, in which Dr. Sachs is trying to get permission to use a new drug called L-DOPA on patients at Beth Abraham Hospital in the Bronx. The patients suffer from encephalitis lethargica, also known as sleeping sickness. Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted, and my guest on the program today is a giant of American music, composer Tobias Picker. I spoke with Tobias about his life in music, and in particular about 3 operas, Awakenings, Lily Elba, and Fantastic Mr. Fox. Let's dive right in. How did you meet Oliver Sacks?
He came to dinner. I gave a dinner party in the early 1990s for him to attend with a mutual friend and the author Judith Rossner, who wrote one-time bestseller Looking for Mr. Goodbar, but also was the author of the book Emmeline, which I based my first opera, Emmeline, on. And was working with her at the time. And again, as I said, a mutual friend of Oliver Sacks brought him to my house for dinner. So I was interested in, we were interested in meeting each other because he was always interested in meeting people interesting people or people with who had interesting professions with Tourette syndrome. And I wanted to meet him as I thought he might be able to help me with my Tourette's syndrome, which had plagued me all my life. And we became friends.
Is it, I mean, it must be very interesting to become friends with somebody. Now you're going to set his work as a ballet and then as an opera. I mean, how was that working relationship? Was it different working with somebody who had become a friend who had helped you?
Well, I felt very close to him, and I wanted to find a way to combine his words with my music, because I thought he was a scientist and a doctor, and but he was and he was an observer of phenomena, but he was, as a writer, his prose is, to me, is it's very artful, and it to me, he was fascinated by people with musical or artistic talent. He could play the piano quite well, but he didn't consider himself to be talented or artistic. But I used to tell him that I felt his writing qualified him as an artist, because he really, the way he wrote it, to me it was art. And he, in turn, was very taken with my music, and in certain pieces in particular, obsessed by them. And so there was this artistic connection that we bonded over, and it was a natural outgrowth of the friendship to connect the two. And we worked on that while he was alive. I couldn't interest The reason I wrote a ballet first based on Awakenings is because I couldn't interest any of the opera companies that I had contacts with in Awakenings. They didn't see it as an opera. They couldn't imagine it as an opera until James Robinson, who was artistic director at Opera Theatre St. Louis, and came along and was shocked that I had the rights to do to Awakenings, because he thought it would be a fantastic subject for an opera, and it worked out pretty well. I tell the fairy tale musically at the beginning of the opera, with the chorus, telling the story of Sleeping Beauty from the Grimm's version, which is very poetic. They talk about, it wasn't just sleeping, the princess who fell asleep. Everything in the castle fell asleep. Her parents on their thrones fell asleep. The fire in the fireplace in the kitchen froze in its place. The flies on the wall, everything stopped. Time stopped for 100 years. So that was the perfect allegory for Awakenings. But telling this story, it's told in a kind of a sing-song way in the beginning, and over a ground bass, with these repeated octaves on A, the note A, which repeats for quite a long time. And A's, I use a lot of symbology for names in my operas. So Oliver Sacks is always A. So that's the big thing in his name, is the A. And so that represents this coming together of Oliver Sacks and Sleeping Beauty.
No, I love that. I'm so. I mean, that image that you mentioned, and I don't think I knew that the original Sleeping Beauty, that everything stopped. I mean, all time. She was in a
In the
spell
Grimm's fairy tale version.
in the Grimm's
There
fairy.
are many,
Okay.
there are other versions of Sleeping Beauty, but we went to the original German. Sorry, I'm fluent in many languages, including German, and he liked the Grimm's version in German the best, and I read it in translation, and yeah, so the very first thing that you learn is in Awakenings is, and this is from the first page of the opera. This is the libretto. A slumber fell upon the kingdom. The princess fell upon her bed. The king and queen fell on their thrones. The court upon their chairs. A slumber fell upon the kingdom. The horses fell upon their straw. The doves all slept upon the eaves. The flies upon the wall. The fire in the kitchen froze. The wind and leaves went still, and all the castle slept. 100 years the castle slept. Around it grew a hedge of thorns, protecting Sleeping Beauty. Fascinating. And
Yeah.
the parallels to Oliver Sacks happening to arrive at Beth Abraham Hospital at this particular moment when L-DOPA had been discovered for Parkinson's patients, and he put all this together, and he becomes the prince in his own fairy tale and awakens the Sleeping Beauties.
Pages, he reads, he reads, he reads.
Nurse Rodriguez, there are 500 patients to tend to.
I'm sorry, I must leave you.
The frozen ones are just a few. They're like Parkinson's, only much worse. All hopeless. All hopeless.
Doctor, 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 help me, help me, help me, help me. I'm going to die, I'm going to die. I'm going to die, I'm going to die.
That I were not afraid.
Let's go back to Lily Elba, though, if you don't mind.
But Lily Elba is, says in the beginning of the score, the first full-scale opera about a transgender person and composed for a trans opera singer in the title role. Lily Elba lived from 1882 to 1931 and was one of the first persons to undergo gender affirmation surgery. And before transition, she was known as the acclaimed Danish landscape painter Einar Wegener. She was happily married to the painter Gerda Wegener, who died in 1940, an important artist considered the Danish pioneer of Art Deco, and a sought after portraitist who came into her own as a portrait artist after Lily's transition and using Lily as her main model.
What did you have a librettist in mind? How did you structure the opera? How did you think about the dramatic arc of this life and turning that into an opera?
My librettist, J.D. McClatchy, who wrote the librettos for Emmeline and Dolores Claiborne and many other composers' operas, died in 2016. And so with that, I began working with a new librettist on Awakenings, Lily Elba, and now Safe Haven, which is the opera we're writing together now, Arye Lev Stolman, the novelist, who's also my husband. And so Lily Elba was after Awakenings, and it was the second opera that we did together. We approached the story for the opera, jumping off from a memoir, an as-told-to memoir that Lily Elba left us, called Man into Woman. And based the story on her real life story as she saw it. And we didn't use anything from the book, The Danish Girl, or the title, because that's just another take on her life. We wanted to go to the source. And the opera follows the arc, kind of the arc of her life, but mainly from the last few years of it when she began the surgeries that would end up killing her. She was desperate to become married to a man. In 1929, even to a modern artist in the 20s of Danish origin living in Paris and in Germany, it was to her mind necessary in order to be a full woman to be married to a man and have children. So she wanted a uterus transplant which they attempted in 1930, and that ended up killing her. She was very far ahead of her time, because even today we're not quite there yet, though I think that will come.
Wow, that's and that was in the 1920s.
She died in 30, I believe, or 31.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So this quest, I was just looking at your website in the description for the opera, and I don't know if you wrote that or if someone else did, but it kind of compares Lily to Orpheus in a way. This idea of
the opera is framed by the Orpheus myth. It begins with their attending a new theater piece based on Orpheus and Eurydice, and connections, the threads of connection between Orpheus and Eurydice are revealed as the opera progresses. My subjects tend to find me.
I was just about to say that. Or do they find you? Yeah.
They tend to find me. They grow out of long, standing interests. Lily Elba comes out of a series of coincidences. I happened to see the film The Danish Girl, which is also based on the life of Lily Elba, starring Eddie Redmayne. And I remember when I saw that film in 2015, walking out of the theater thinking, boy, that's an operatic life, but how would it be done? Because I was... like many people at the time, even today, at 9 years ago, I wasn't yet aware that there were out trans opera singers out there who could perform such a work. But when I, after I met and began working with the Chialukas, who's one of the world's leading singers of trans experience, it evolved after a series of conversations about other projects that I was working on with her. And it seemed the logical thing to ask her to create the role of Lily Elba as a trans woman herself, and not going down the rather strange road that the film went down by casting Eddie Redmayne, a cisgender male, in the role of playing a trans woman. So Lily Elba, it also came about because I had been working with Lucia on a production of Don Giovanni that I produced in Tulsa, at the Tulsa Opera, when I was artistic director there. And she was, after I cast her, I discovered the first trans woman ever to sing the role of Don Giovanni. And she became the first trans woman to perform on the American lyric stage in Don Giovanni. I'm looking for subjects that have a universality, but also a specificity which makes them unique.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I mean, you know, opera is obviously inherently dramatic. There's something, you know, it's big, right? It tends to be, it's larger than life by its very nature. And you know, and I'm certainly seeing these days a lot of operas that are about everyday life almost. And you know, just for me personally, I feel like I'm not totally convinced that everyday life is an operatic subject. I think that you know, there needs to be something more, because if everyone's singing for X number of hours, there's a, you know, inherently kind of suspend your disbelief, inherent not surreality, but there is a, you know, it's not everyday life, right? I mean, it's opera, it's something different. So I was just curious about your take on that.
I need a story that's a, you know, knock you on your ass story. And all my stories are like that. I need a very strong story and very strong characters, principal characters, to move the story forward. So, you know, opera is not a pedestrian art form. You know, it's not crocheting or knitting.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I love the knock you on your ass aspect of the stories that you're looking for. I think that's
look at him. I mean, Emmeline, a woman grows up and marries somebody that she had no idea was her son, nor did he. That's quite a surprise when it happens. Or Thérèse Raquin, I mean, it's hard. It rips you to pieces. The relationship of those relationships in the love triangle, and murder and suicide. And Mr. Fox, well, I was approached for Fantastic Mr. Fox by the Dolls and asked to do it. And the libretto had been written, and I fell in love with that libretto. It's awfully clever and moving, and it's pantheistic, I would say, but it's a story of, you know, the foxes against the animal kingdom, against the human kingdom. Hardly, you know, a day in the life of kind of, or what did you say? What did you call it? The everyday life?
Everyday life, yeah.
Not really everyday. It is every happening every day, but focus zeroes in on a battle between the species.
Cubs, our guests are about to arrive. Is the table all set with food?
My good friends, welcome. Thank you for coming.
Oh, Mr. Fox, I'm so glad to be here. I'm not often asked to a party. For you, my dear, we've a special surprise. I think it will soon make your lovely brown eyes simply sparkle with hedgehog delight.
My dear, so glad you could come.
I can't stay long.
May I have your attention? Are you ready, my friends, with your burrowing song?
We've heard people say that to dwell in the soil is a miserable living, all hard work and toil. But we tell you, in our view, there ain't nothing finer than the courage in lands. We'll fight with a miner, yes, life with a miner. Sweet, that to burrow and delve is the greatest a treat. There are all kinds of wonderful creatures to meet. Some are small, some are furry, and some you can eat.
Like an earthworm,
a toad,
or a slug.
No, nothing compares with the life of a miner. No, nothing compares with the life of the miner.
Oh, we tell you, in our view, there ain't nothing finer than the courage in that to fight with the miner. Yes, life with the miner.
That was wonderful, and I'm not a burrower, only a lowly forager. That's why they've left the empty cell beside me.
My dear, sing us a song, sing us a song, sing to us.
There's just one I know on my favorite theme, so please raise your glasses and utter a toast to the rat whose tragedy moves me.
He stay with us long in the woods. Rita, see how you have nothing to fear from the monster that dwelt in your cellar.
You do seem to have an innate sense of what would work dramatically. I mean, is that something that you just developed over time from writing opera, or is that something that you always possessed?
I think it's something that you're born with. And if you either find an outlet to put it to use, or outlets, or you don't. But I knew from the time I was early single digits, mid single digits, that opera would be my future. Which isn't to say I don't want to write a symphony again. I do, or a string quartet. I do, and when I have time, I will. But I have done. Even between the operas, but I knew that as a child I would be working. I was working toward eventually writing opera. I don't know how I knew that. I guess no. When I was a kid, every year, every Christmas there was an opera, a contemporary opera on television called *The Mall and the Night Visitors*. Mm-hmm. It was on CBS because they commissioned it, with, believe it or not, CBS television. 15 other composers were commissioned to write operas for television, and that was the one that survived. And then NBC bought it, so it was on NBC every Christmas. So I was exposed at an early age to, I knew about Menotti. I knew he was a living composer. He lived in the next town, actually. I wrote to him when I was eight. He answered me. So I had, there were these signs that, but I didn't touch opera until I was nearly 40. But so I wasn't ready. I knew or somebody told me, you can't write an opera until you have mastered a musical instrument, which I did, the piano, and until you have achieved a certain level of proficiency, at least, if not mastery, writing for the orchestra and writing for the voice. So you don't to just, I needed to work in every genre and prove my abilities in every genre before I wrote my first opera at 40. The fascination I have with the voice is that it's a human musical instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, there's, it's the only human musical instrument. It thinks, it feels, it's born, it lives, it dies.
Mm-hmm.
On the violin, and every single human voice is different. Every soprano is different. They over the years, history has tried to codify all the different kinds of voices so that we have our categories that comfort us. But even within those categories, every voice is different, and that's, to me, and it's an endless study, learning how to write for the voice. I'm still learning how to write for the voice. I'm always trying to write as idiosyncratically as possible without compromising my musical language and point of view.
Yeah, there's definitely a mythic through line to all of these things that you're talking about, whether it's Oedipal or, but you seem fascinated by these mythic qualities, these big human questions and tendencies.
I am. And there's several threads that run through the operas. One is that I keep coming back to is strong women. Emmeline was a strong woman. She refused to be banished or to kill herself or leave. She stayed in the town after she was exposed. Right now, even now, we're writing about it. The opera that we're writing now is about an archetypal but historic, very famous American woman who was strong and a pioneer. Women pioneers interest me. It's probably because my mother was one, so we can get that right off the table. Yes, I was brought up by a very strong, innovative woman who was an artist and a designer and a humanist. So I guess that informed these choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. That's great. Thank you. And I enjoyed speaking with you very much.
Thank you, Seth. I enjoyed talking to you too very much.
I want to play another excerpt from the opera Lily Elba. And this is, to me, just one of the most powerful scenes in contemporary opera. This is where Einar reveals that she has always been Lily.
Do you
explain. I'm sure there is some simple reason we don't know.
I am Lena.
I have always been near.
Who can Perhaps he may. He has published about this. Let us see if he can help you.
Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. Find out more at acmusic.org. For Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening.